Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to The Drill Down. We've got business stories behind stocks on the move. I'm Corey Johnson with episode number 138. Just ahead, Beyond Meat announces and re-announces an old deal for a new boost to the stock price. We'll dig a little bit deeper. Plus, a big bet on green fracking pays off for next tier oil fields. And how a big space exploration company, Rocket Lab, is aiming to give SpaceX a run for its money and make space missions easier and cheaper. We're going to talk to Rocket Lab CEO Peter Beck at length, but first, it's sponsor time.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. Never miss another critical event or insight ever. With Era, customize your company watch list and track key events, mentions, filings, and more, all within an easy-to-use, customizable interface. That's Era, AIERA.com.
And you may be listening to The Drill Down on TuneIn or iHeart or Stitcher or Google Play or Spotify or iTunes. Who knows? But it's a lot easier to catch every show if you hit that subscribe button. So please do.
And The Drill Down is brought to you by Brain Trust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. Brain Trust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit braintrust.com. That's BRAINTRUST.com to learn more.
All right, I'm Corey Johnson. Welcome to The Drill Down. We've got business stories behind stocks on the move. Our first show of the new year. I'm glad to be doing it, as always, with executive producer Isaac Webster. Isaac, how are you? Happy New Year.
Happy to be here with you, too. Happy New Year 2022.
Yeah.
It's going to be such a good one.
I'm stoked. We've got lots of good stories. I really like being a journalist in times like this when there's confusion about does the headline mean what's really going on? And often that is not the case. That's why it's fun to dig in a little bit.
Yeah. Well, Corey, what stocks are you drilling down on today?
Well, let's start with Beyond Meat. Speaking of headlines pointing us in the wrong direction.
Beyond Meat shares have fallen 53% in a year. What's going on
And yet they got a big boost this week with news, headline news, that they had their deal with KFC. They're going to have a deal with KFC for a national rollout of meatless fried chicken for a limited time starting Monday. Stock was up initially 10% on that announcement. The thing is, it was treated as news. It isn't news. The deal with Yum Brands, Yum owns KFC and lots of other stuff. They announced it in February 2021. They also announced it in September of 2019 at a Barclays conference. And yes, they announced it again this week. So, you know, it was re-announced, but the stock surged nonetheless. KFC's restaurants are going to add that plant-based chicken to their menus. But as I mentioned, it's a limited trial in the U.S. They are spending tons of money to get these deals. Now, they had $132 million in gross profit. That is after paying for the peas or whatever else are using to make their products. $132 million gross profit, but they spent an operating expenditures of $240 million in the last year, another $140 million in capital expenditures. And pea pricing, you know, inflation's real for all of us. 100% increase in pea pricing, which say they've managed with futures contracts. But the question is, now you, Isaac, told me you actually buy this stuff, this Beyond Meat stuff.
Yeah, every week we eat Beyond Meat in our house. I make something with it.
Why?
Sometimes twice a week. It's good. It's good. And, you know, we're not that big of meat eaters, so it's nice to have a different
kind of protein. Have you heard of salad?
We do salad as well.
Do you ever boil broccoli or even steam it? God forbid.
Every day. Sometimes I bake it.
Okay.
Sometimes I air fry it. No, but Beyond Meat, I mean,
when my kids were the age of your kids, we used to cut the broccoli stalks, which kids don't like to eat because it's a little crunchier. We cut it thin, and we'd tell them they were broccoli stars. They loved the broccoli stars.
Oh, that's a good idea. I like that idea.
The kids are going to hate me.
Well, thankfully, our kids do eat the broccoli. But Beyond Meat, they also love Beyond Meat. I mean, we've never had a problem with it. It tastes great, and it does the trick.
Well, their sales in retail channels, in spite of the fact that they're adding retail channels, forget the fast food stuff we're talking about, have actually been declining. Mm-hmm. And while there is anticipation that people with New Year's resolutions are going to run into Kentucky Fried Chicken for health reasons, right there you lost me. But yes, they're going to run into Taco Bell, McDonald's, and Kentucky Fried Chicken because they've made these big commitments to getting meat out of their diet. And then while they're in a Taco Bell or a McDonald's or a KFC, they're going to say, you know, I came here because I don't like meat. Let me order the Beyond Meat Fried Chicken. Okay, that's the logic.
I see your point. I totally see your point. I mean, I don't go to McDonald's or KFC, so I would never be going there for their Beyond Meat offerings.
Okay, but nonetheless, this is there. And I should also mention, I'm not a big fan of Wall Street analysts, as you know, because they do things like the Bank of America analyst who has been bullish on Beyond for a while. They dropped their 2030 total addressable market for plant-based foods or plant-based meat. Mm-hmm. They've dropped it to $7.5 billion. Remember what the number was on a week ago with our guests for 2030?
What?
So it's a $7.5 billion now. Guess what they thought it was going to be?
$9 billion.
40.
Oh.
40 billion. They dropped it from 40 billion to $7.5 billion.
Wow.
They're both probably stupid, wild ass guesses. But anyway.
What was the reasoning behind that massive drop?
Because people aren't buying the product.
Am I the only customer of Beyond Meat?
Nonetheless, the Beyond Meat CEO in their last conference call justifying all their expenditures on operating expenses and capital expenditures by the deals that they are signing with like the likes of Yum Brands. Here is CEO Ethan Brown.
And then you look at the activities across our Yum partnership, whether it's KFC in China or Pizza Hut here in the U.S. with a pepperoni test or Pizza Hut with the ongoing distribution in the U.K. of, I think, three different Beyond toppings. And then, of course, you heard Taco Bell or this year talk about plans with us. So all of these things are accumulating within our system and requiring us to, in a good way, to make investments to be able to serve these future opportunities. And you go into, whether it's Canada and A&W or the Panda Express here in the U.S., you look at continued rollout of new products in retail. And, of course, internationally, we're making significant investments. And as I mentioned in my comments, just got back from the EU, both in the EU and China. And so all of those are not about this year and these results during this period of what we would characterize as instability, but rather for 2022 and beyond.
So 2022 and beyond. I wish them well. I'd like people to have healthier diets. I don't know if Beyond Meat is healthier or not, but this continues to be a story where the stock gets excited on old news about limited rollouts at things like KFC.
I can't wait in 3 months, we're going to be talking about this Yum Brands deal with Beyond Meat again. There'll be a new press release again. It'll be a fun show in 3 months.
Yeah, or it'll be the McPlant product, which barely moves the needle for them. I don't know.
Corey, what's your next drill down?
Let's look at Fuel Cell Energy.
Fuel Cell, friend of the show, trades under FCEL. Shares have lost 52% in a year.
Well, we've also talked to the CEO of Plug Power in the past. Fuel Cell reporting earnings this week that were weak. Actually, I said this week. Sorry, on the 29th, so right at the end of the year, they announced just weak, lower revenue. I mean, this is an insanely priced stock that is priced for, not for perfection, it's priced in the hope that this business is going to be growing like crazy. It's trading, even now, after, as you pointed, 52% collapse in the stock in the last year, price of sales of 32 times sales. And yet their revenues are decreasing. Revenues went from $17 million, $14 million in Q4, year over year. Their business, revenue over the last 3 years down 22%. They moved away from product sales and tried to enter into these big product purchase agreements with big customers that are big users of energy. But they're spending so much. Their capital expenditures went from $30 million in 2020 to $73 million in 2021. So the question remains, when are these deals going to come in? And do they even have enough to handle? you know, if they're doing these big purchase agreements with their customers, can they even make this stuff? They're basically saying no, that if you look at their business and their manufacturing capacity, it's not big enough for the size of their opportunities. Here's Chief Financial Officer Mike Bishop.
And then you also look at the size of potential carbon capture opportunities, which are going to be megawatt scale. It makes sense to add additional equipment to be able to realize that 200 megawatts of volume over time. Now, obviously, we're not going to do all of that this coming year. The additional CapEx would be around capacity for solid oxide. As we sit here today, we have a small capacity for solid oxide in our Calgary facility in Canada. But as Jason mentioned, solid oxide and electrolysis is a significant market opportunity. And to be able to, you know, capture product sales we are going to need additional capacity over time. So that's where some of the spending is coming from as well.
So yeah, these guys have figured out they've got to be a bigger business to be any kind of growing business, and they're not there yet, spending a lot of money to get there. It's definitely another story where the future of this business is what people are paying for right now, but the future is not materializing.
Corey, what's your next drill down?
I want to look at one of the most successful stocks of the entire year. The year being a few days old. Next Tier Oilfield Solutions.
It trades under NEX, N-E-X, and shares have gained 26% over the past 12 months.
This is not a business that I looked at before today. I spent a lot of time today reading about it. It's got a $1.2 billion market cap right now, up from, well, geez, it's, as you mentioned, it has increased in value fantastically. The stock price is $5.07 right now. It was at $3.50 just a week ago, or even lower. These guys have been doing deals, and they've been doing deals to grow what's a really interesting business. So let's talk about this company a little bit. It's in the fracking business, particularly what they call well completion. But well completion in the oil business means the second you think there's oil in the ground, you hire some guys to come in and complete the well. Huh. You might just do the seismic. You might just know where the oil is somehow, magically guessing. You bring these guys in to do everything after that. Now, they have been acquiring companies that focus on fracking and focus on fracking in a particular area. They bought a company called Alamo Acquisition for about $250 million in August. About a year before, 2 years before that, they bought a company called C&J, same deal, about $250 million. And the revenue growth rate is ticking up fantastically. Now, Next Tier Oilfield Solutions is focused on West Texas. About half their business is in West Texas in the Permian Basin. The Permian Basin, as you know, is a third of all U.S. oil production. So it's not a giant area, but it is giant in the oil business, and that's where these guys are focused. What are they focused on, Isaac? You're wondering.
I am.
Cat Tier 4 hydraulic fracturing.
I was going to say fracking.
Yeah.
Look at that.
But Cat Tier 4 hydraulic fracking.
Why don't you explain what that is? I have no idea.
So Tier 4 hydraulic fracking is really, really interesting. It is the cutting edge of fracking. So right now, the way you do fracking is you bring a bunch of equipment out to a wellhead and you have a giant drill that goes very far down in the Permian. You're going about a mile and a half, 2 miles down. Then you're going about a mile and a half horizontally. Wow. You're pumping a lot of water in. You're pumping a lot of water out. You're obviously pumping a lot of rock out and other stuff. You're also pumping a lot of propant in. So the moment you frack the well, you can also pump in the propant. The propant holds the cracks in the ground apart from collapsing on themselves, at which point oil and gas flows up. A lot of energy is used to do this. Almost all that energy is supplied by trucks that come out there with diesel fuel, with gasoline. So think about the irony of this. You drill down 2 miles. You drill across a mile and a half. You've got a ginormous grill and pumps, pumping stuff down, pumping stuff up, putting pipe in the ground, running that drill bit, all using gasoline. So you can find some oil, get rid of the gas, and get some more gasoline out of the end of the process. So what is Tier 4 hydraulic fracturing? Fracking? Tier 4 hydraulic fracking rigs are actually powered by the natural gas coming out of the ground at the wellhead. Think about that.
That's interesting.
It's really freaking interesting. You don't have to bring the gasoline out. Now, most rigs are still run on diesel gas.
Okay.
And the pumping solutions and everything else. But an increasing amount of these rigs are these tier four hydraulic fracking rigs powered in part or in whole by the natural gas you get out of the wellhead. No more trucking in the gasoline to power your drilling rigs. This is cutting edge stuff.
Yeah.
And these guys have made a huge, next tier has made a huge bet on CAT, which is made by Caterpillar, right? Tier four hydraulic fracking rigs. Half their rigs right now, half their fleet, are these tier four gas-powered hydraulic fracking rigs. Mm-hmm. Gas-powered or half, you know, up to half gas-powered. They're a lot cheaper to operate. According to these guys, cost goes from $16 million per well to $6 million per well. So it's cheaper. It's also environmentally cleaner because you're burning off the gas that's coming out of the well instead of burning it in the environment or selling it at, you know, perpetually depressed gas prices.
I'm assuming so this less was, manpower as well.
Not really. Maybe actually, manpower is a big issue for this business. They still need a lot of people at the well ahead of still a lot of roughnecks work in the rig. But, and that is an issue in this business perpetually, but a really big issue right now. Not perpetually. Whenever the gas is, whenever oil and gas is booming, they can't find enough roughnecks. Whenever there's a slight correction, roughnecks are out of work madly. In any case, these guys, after sort of in the last quarter, the end of Q3, kind of saying, you know, I don't know. We don't know what it's going to be. First September looked good. October looked good. We don't know what November is going to look like. We don't know what December is going to look like. Thanksgiving, Christmas is often slow down. So we'll wait and see. Well, they waited. They saw. And today they put out a press release, or this week they put out a press release saying that it's all working. And that, things were really good in the fourth quarter. In fact, the fourth quarter revenues are going to be up about 25% from the third quarter. Mm-hmm. And that things are just going the way they want them to. Here's CEO Robert Drummond.
Our customers, I would say, are engaging earlier than they typically have been for 2022, which means that they're worried about gaining access to the fleets they want to work with. And, you know, I'm expecting net pricing gains in 2022 at double-digit percentage as we get through the year. I mean, we got to be pretty accurate in our inflation estimations, and that's going to be a bit of a moving target, I think, in 2022. But I think it's how fast that occurs will be the net pricing aspect will be determined a bit by how well we do at predicting what inflation looks like. But one thing that we really like as we've built a company around, you know, having gas-powered fleets and an integrated service model is that we're able to do some focusing now on like-minded customers and have a little more say about who we end up hooking up with, customers that are focused on, you know, efficiency and consistent loading for the fleet.
So not every customer sees the value in this stuff. Drummond mentioned in customers, he went on later to talk about how finding the right customers is important as anything in this business. But these guys took a big bet on this new technology, doing some big acquisitions to make that happen, watching their stock price kind of crater. This week, we see the results of those big bets with some great success for next year. All right, coming up next, our guest, Rocket Lab CEO Peter Beck. What an interesting company, right? SpaceX gets all his attention and Richard Branson and Elon Musk get all his attention for starting these space businesses, throwing Jeff Bezos, if we went there, and Blue Origin. But meanwhile, these guys are quietly launching hundreds of satellites with dozens of quiet launches, smaller satellites. These guys are already doing it. While other space companies are getting promising a great future in space, these guys are in space right now. We've got an interesting conversation with the CEO of Rocket Lab right after this.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Brain Trust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. Brain Trust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit braintrust.com, that's BRAINTRUST.com to learn more.
All right, welcome back to the Drill Down podcast. As promised, Rocket Lab CEO Peter Beck, Pete Beck, joins us right now from New Zealand, which is interesting because your company's based in Long Beach, California, with operations in Colorado. So why wouldn't you be in New Zealand?
Well, we have a few operations down here in New Zealand as well. Of course, the launch site being one of them.
That small thing necessary in a rocket is the actual rocket launch, which gets us to my big question. What is Rocket Lab? How do you define the company?
Yes, I mean, really, we're a space company, an end-to-end space company. I think we're most famously known for our launch vehicles, the Electron launch vehicle and soon to be Neutron. But we also build satellites and spacecraft as well. We have a number of missions, really exciting missions, actually. One going to the moon later next year, and two around Mars for NASA, and our own private mission to Venus. But I think the best way to describe us is an end-to-end, vertically integrated space company.
And you're launching rockets. This is not a speculative on paper. Well, maybe speculative, but it is not just something on paper where someday you're going to do something. You've actually launched rockets. And you've launched a few of them.
Yeah, we put over 105 satellites in orbit. We're actually the second most frequently launched U.S. rocket, fourth most launched rocket in the entire world. So, yep, we certainly launch rockets.
And yet the stock is a new thing for you guys. Why have a U.S. listed stock at all?
So really, as I thought about, the company and the company's trajectory and growth, there was kind of three things that going public was, intended to optimize for us. Two really important, one probably less important. So first important one is obviously access to capital. This is a very capital intensive business. However, we've never had any issues raising capital, but having public capital certainly helps. Secondly is being able to have that public currency to be able to go and do things like acquisitions, which, we've done a few of already. And then finally, it's about building, building a company that has a succession plan. There's a lot of space companies with obviously very, very public founders, but what I want to do here is build something that lasts forever and ever, and being a public company ensures that will happen.
You mentioned acquisitions. You just acquired a company called Advanced Solutions based in Colorado. Mm-hmm. What did you get that you didn't have before with that deal announced just a few weeks ago?
Yeah, so that's space software companies are incredibly, incredibly rare, and software is such a massive element of the space ecosystem. So, what we're trying to do here is acquire all of the skills and at scale that we need to go and execute on big programs. So, software is a huge element, and that's the only 50 person software team that's dedicated to just building space software that has a huge amount of experience, lots of interplanetary missions. And of course, it needed to really jive with the culture of the company. So we're very, very lucky that all of that came together, and we're able to to bring that team on board. And the one previously we did that was Sinclair Interplanetary, and that was another really successful acquisition for us.
And what does space software do? I'm sorry if this sounds like a dumb question, but in what way is it a particularly unique practice?
Well, look, satellites are just machines. Satellites are machines that are on orbit, but with the peculiarity that, if the machine breaks down, you certainly can't just whip up there and turn some knobs. So, software is an integral part of any machine. And as satellites are becoming more and more powerful and more reliant on software, these are very unique capabilities. Software in space has to allow for lots and lots of different things you don't have down on Earth. For example, doses of radiation from sun ejector, you don't really need to worry about that. But up in space, that just like resets your computer and scrambles bits, flips bits, and does all kinds of crazy stuff. So it is a very, very unique environment to operate in.
Is the computing need very different as well, or can you sort of run with the software you need in your typical, laptop or whatever? I mean, the power of chips is so great, or are there particular kinds of computing needs necessary?
Yeah, compute's really not that much of an issue, although there's some really interesting stuff happening with some artificial intelligence on orbit. But compute's not that much of an issue. It's more about ensuring the really, really robust software requirements that you have on orbit to keep those machines, operate.
Oh, what are the AI things that are interesting?
Well, so, typically, the way you would, if you take an Earth observation satellite, for example, you take the pictures and you send all that raw data down to Earth. And of course, that's, you know, that's a lot of data to go down an RF link and over a ground station. So if you can actually do some of the some of the machine learning in orbit and some of the sorting in orbit, and just send down the insights, then of course that has a much smaller requirement on the bandwidth of actually receiving back to Earth.
It's interesting business. How did you end up getting into this?
Well, for me, it was kind of a hard-coded thing. So, the youngest memory I have of a child is actually standing outside with my father, and he was pointing to the stars and, pointed out to me that those are suns, and around those suns have planets, and there could be somebody standing there and looking back at you. And that was really the moment that, for maybe a 3 or 4 year old kid was just like, okay, that's pretty serious. And I've always, loved engineering. So if you mix engineering and space together, then, you end up building rockets and satellites.
Yeah, I feel like we had a fallow period, through the 70s and 80s and post Challenger disaster, the space shuttle crash and everything, that space and space, forget space travel, just space exploration, the interest in the science in space wasn't there. Governments around the world weren't funding it anymore. Now that seems to have changed. I don't understand what's changed.
Well, I think there's a number of things that have changed. So, firstly, the requirements and the scale of the machines have shrunken enormously. So, a satellite that used to be the size of a school bus can be the size of a refrigerator now. And access to space has been, improved remarkably. So, it's really almost the democratization of space has happened in the last couple of decades, quite frankly. And, it used to take governments to go to space and governments to do anything in space. Right. These days, private companies, we launched a satellite that was built by a group of universities in California.
Right here at Cal Berkeley.
A group of high schools. Right. Yeah, no, high schools, Irvine High Schools in California. Yeah, they built a satellite and we launched it. So, the ability to access the technologies and access space is just, the bar has lowered so dramatically. And whenever you do that, business and commerce will find a way to take advantage of that. And, just like, when steamships started sailing and then when commercial aircraft started flying, we're in the same era now in space.
What does the high school satellite do? I hope it's something really dumb.
Well, I can't actually remember, to be honest with you. It's like 3 or 4 years ago. I think they did have a mission. It might have been an ionospheric mission, if I recall. But quite frankly, if it just beeps, that's quite enough.
It is. It's such a neat thing. And I think that there's are there certain business cases for you going forward? I mean, there's obviously the billionaires and their space tourism. With the cowboy hats or without the cowboy hats. But I do think that that's a little bit of a mask for some serious business that can be done. Well, there's of course, there's a lot of talk about internet being beamed down from space to access the internet in places where we can't right now. What are the other use cases that you see driving your business 5 and 10 years from now?
Well, I'll preface that by saying that The biggest thing to be thought of and done in space is yet. We're really just, opening the domain of space up to be able to, commercialize and do things. So I think, there's a lot of really big things yet to happen. And I think a lot of people go through their daily lives and enjoy the kind of the fruits of the space infrastructure without actually realizing that they are using them. So space is one of those things that are like, water in a pipe. It's hidden infrastructure that sits behind the water in the pipe. And the same with space, because you just can't see it. If you call up and get a pizza delivered, that's all of that is being enabled from the GPS network in space. So your pizza actually turns up to your house, not the neighbor's house. So it's just even very, very basic things like that are fundamental. But I think, some of the things that get me excited is using space to solve some of the biggest problems down here on Earth. I mean, there is no doubt that our climate is changing and our Earth is changing. And when you're kind of down on the ground, it's you can see what's going on around you. But actually sitting up in space and looking at a macro view of the planet and trying to understand that, especially as weather patterns will, you know, start to become more erratic, it becomes really, really critical for just everyday, you know, everyday lives. So I think space really holds some of the keys to some of the biggest problems here down on Earth. And there's some really, really cool programs that, you know, are looking to exploit space for just that reason.
And most of your spaceships have been in kind of low Earth orbit, right? And not you mentioned Mars, you mentioned Venus and the moon, and that's all super cool, but that's not where your business is, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, the majority of our launch business is certainly in low Earth orbit. So apart from one mission where, well, actually two missions where we're using Electron to go to the moon for NASA early next year, and our private mission to Venus in 2023, the majority of at least of our launch stuff is in low Earth orbit. But within our space systems division, I would say the majority of our work is actually is not around Earth. It's actually around other planets and other celestial bodies. So and those programs, you know, those are super exciting. And the common theme is, you know, with all of these is actually using that information. You know, we're going to, you know, to Mars for NASA with a pair of dual spacecraft to really understand, you know, how Mars's atmosphere gets stripped by the sun. And this is incredibly important for understanding our own planet.
And you mentioned systems and services, and that's an intriguing aspect of the business to me. When I look at it, I think, you know, cool, you launch some satellites and it's all sort of mission driven. But in fact, you've got the chance for kind of ongoing revenues through service and to explain how that works and how those contracts work.
Yeah, so I mean, look, the way I look at the launch part of the business is it's a glorified freight company. We pick up a package and we drop it off to a destination. Now, it happens to be a very, very challenging destination and a very challenging delivery truck, but nevertheless, it's kind of a freight business. And on the space system side, you know, we're building the infrastructure that is going to go into orbit. And sometimes we launch it on our launch vehicle and sometimes we don't. And then we have other parts of the business where we're operating someone else's satellite that we neither built nor launched. But the whole point of this is an end-to-end space company. And I think if you look at the space companies of the future, or at least the large ones, that's what they're going to look like. Because when you have your own rocket and you have your own satellites and you're vertically integrated from literally raw material through to delivery in orbit and operation in orbit, that is a very, very powerful, you know, powerful combination that enables you to do things at a pace and a cost that's just unfathomable if you just own one of those, or, you know, each one of those elements.
Fascinating business. You've achieved a fantastic valuation, which you're going to have to grow your business into, but you've got some real revenues already, which is something.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, there's space is a very aspirational place, and there's a lot of folks that are very aspirational. But I would, you know, I would say that space is a little bit shy in execution, and that's something that, you know, we're always about. I mean, we put our head down and we you know, our goal is to just deliver. So yeah, as a result, of course, yep, there's revenues there, and you know, the market is valued the company for the very scarce resources of launch that it has, and also the very, very complicated and challenging projects that only a few companies and in fact a few countries around the world have demonstrated that they can pull off.
All right, Pete Beck is the CEO of Rocket Lab. Pete, we really appreciate your time. Cool venture, one we'll keep an eye on when the drill down continues. We'll take a look back at this business. I got one number that will tell you a whole lot about how Rocket Lab is a little bit different than some of the other companies trying to do some work in space. That one number will tell us a whole lot, and I'll tell you that number right after this.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. With Era, give yourself an information advantage. Connect directly to earnings calls and other investor events with live transcription and event intelligence. That's Era, AIERA.com.
And we hope you're enjoying the regular editions of the Drill Down podcast. It's easier when you use your smart speaker and you say to your smart speaker, "Hey, smart speaker, play the Drill Down podcast," and you'll hear our latest show.
And let us know what companies you think we should be drilling down on. Talk to us on Twitter and Instagram by following at Drill Down Pod, and connect with us directly at our website, bizpod.net.
All right, we're back with the Drill Down podcast and the Drill Down Bite, that one number that tells us a whole lot. That number, as it relates to Rocket Labs is their revenues, Isaac, for the first 6 months of this calendar year. This company did, here's a number, $29,472,000, a substantial increase, $29,472,000 from the previous year when they only did about $8.7 million in revenues. So this business is suddenly growing really fast. The bull case for this stuff is always, hey, there's going to be lots of things happening in space. But I always think the bull cases like that are nonsense. It's really about how much business these guys are going to do. And it looks like they're capturing a lot of new business in this calendar year so far. We'll see what it looks like when they release third quarter results. But first half of the year, big growth over the first half of the previous year.
Dare I say it took off like a rocket?
No.
Rocket Labs?
Do not dare.
Rocket Labs?
Yeah. This is when I wish we had paid the money for the music license and we could play Elton John. But we won't do that. They also have, these guys also have some pretty nutty names for their missions. I should have asked him about this. But some of their missions, when I look at some of the filings, the financial filings, I was like, wait a minute. Am I reading this stuff right? They've got names of some of their missions. Let me pull it up here real fast. The July 2021 mission with the U.S. Space Force as their client was, the name of the mission? It's a little chilly up here, or a little Chile. It's spelled like the country. Or another one, running out of toes. Another one, they go up so fast. Their January 2021 launch. Another one leaves the crust.
You know what? Maybe this fun humor is partly a reflection of the fact that they're New Zealand company, yeah. And they're just happier people in New Zealand. They have less worries, less things to fear in New Zealand. Okay. Isn't it supposed to be idyllic? It's a little utopia.
Well, that's all we've got on the Drill Down podcast. Thank you very much. Isaac Webster is our speculative executive editor. Ben Wilson is our editor at large. We're grateful for both of you guys. The Drill Down is a production of the Business Podcast Network.